At the Steel Conference, we also got the chance to talk with Ideastatica's engineering and business leadership to talk about where the company and maybe the industry are going. This turned into a great conversation where we learned how the company is set up to make good products that can help move the industry, how things have changed in the big picture here, and really how to make a productive and fun work environment. The last part is some of the detail I took, but I think they'll really like what they have to say. As always, let us know if you have any questions and enjoy.
The Structural Engineering Podcast.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us on the podcast today. We're really excited to sit down with you. Would you mind starting off by introducing yourselves?
Sure. My name is Stephanie Kennard. I'm one of the newest members to the Ideastatica family. I have been with us for about 9 months now.
Okay.
I am one of the unique creatures here at the company in that I am not an engineer.
What? You're missing out. It is so wonderful.
So, but, you know, I think Andrea had mentioned that we started the U.S. office about 5 years ago, right? Everyone that we were bringing on were engineers, really helping us to establish a technical presence inside of the market. And as you start to grow and as you start to get your customer base and even grow inside of the company with more employees or whatnot, we made the decision that we wanted to bring in some business experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I come from a strong, you know, business experience in growing sales organizations and things like that. And so that is how I ended up at Ideastatica.
Nice.
Very cool.
My name is Wojciech Halupan. I'm Chief Product Officer with Ideastatica, but an engineer at heart.
Yeah.
So spent 8 years designing structures, mostly steel and timber, and then transitioned to a job I never knew existed before.
Yeah.
So it all was new to me. But then I was able to keep that same principle, that the thing that drew me towards structural engineering, even in this position. So finding ways to make something complex very easy to use, very easy to replicate, make lives easier for our users.
Yeah, good engineering then. We can make it simple and simplify a complex problem. That is the root of engineering, I think.
I'm curious, from that background of structural engineering and now kind of leading a lot of that at Ideastatica, what has been the most unique or interesting thing that you found that one country might do than another?
Oh, that's been very eye-opening. I think it's about finding out there's more ways to bake a cake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no one right way to do it. Each region, each country is a lot different. And you would be very naive trying to find the perfect, the one universal way to design connections.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into it. It's a continuing dialogue. And I would say that I found that communication is one of the more important, if not the most important, soft skill
that
an engineer can have.
I assume one country doesn't do it the best and we should all just model them. Everyone does it their way, and they're all different, but communicate more is one. That one's easy, but you shouldn't do connections like this country, whatever.
Yeah.
It's some specific. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Would you say that for software engineering, for example, now that I have the comparison, I think that is a right way to write the code globally.
Yes.
There's no right way to design structures globally.
Yes.
The environment changes.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie, I'm really curious, as overseeing, a huge portion of the company, what is the company actually looking to solve? And then on a more day-to-day basis, what are you personally obsessed with trying to solve right now?
So I will answer that backwards for you, right? So what am I personally obsessed with trying to solve? I would think that is a very personal mission for myself. I would say in the last 9 months, I've learned more than I have in probably the last 9 years of my career, because I've joined a brand new industry, right?
Yeah.
Learning to work and communicate with engineers, right?
Very good at communicating.
I've had to learn what's the market like, right? How do they do it today, right? So I think as a company, we want to solve problems for engineers.
Yeah.
I can't do that until I can say, do I understand the problems? You know, for me personally, one really interesting fact was I learned is one of the things that you kind of approach from a business perspective is always understanding what your competitive landscape looks like, right? As you go into a business. And so as I started down that mission and doing research, I realized there's not really competitive product per se that I could say is the number one product Ideastatica competes with. Rather, we compete with the concept of hand calculations,
right? Yeah.
And people using spreadsheets. And just as a person that was very ignorant to this world prior, I think to myself, the bridges I drive on and the skyscrapers I go up in are designed on hand calculations.
That's horrifying. So, yes. You know, for me personally, that's my personal mission. I want to help these engineers understand that there's a better, more reliable way to do these types of things. Yeah. Right. And I think it aligns really well with the mission of IdeaStatica.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm curious too, from like a, you know, I'm trying to think really big picture here from like a business standpoint. What do you think people are most often getting or misunderstanding about the way you guys do business, or kind of just the misunderstanding of software business or companies?
I don't know from general software type company. What I can say, I think, is one of the things I hear over and over is, well, I don't do enough of that to need your tool, right? And so I think people kind of have this mindset of a tool like this is designed for that super complex type of connection. And really, that's not the case. Really, there's a way to be more efficient with even the really simple type of connections. Right. And I think that's really one of the things that people have the biggest misnomer about.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd add to that that people often do, well, either underestimate or overestimate what the software can do.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of overestimating, it's not a silver bullet. It's never going to be a silver bullet. We don't want to take the jobs away from people. If the software could do the thinking a structural engineer can do, I mean, what's left?
Yeah.
That was always my question when, even back when I was a structural engineer and developing tools, trying to capture the smarts into algorithms, I always found it very interesting to look at, okay, so now if these are all the if and or decisions and I've codified them into something, what's left? And the thing that's left is the ability to look at the bigger picture and decide what's right for the given location. So we think of the software as something that enables you to evaluate options and to make the right decision.
Yeah.
Not something that will think of the best solution for you.
Before you moved to the world of software, did you see software as a black box? And has your mind changed on that?
Oh yeah, the black box discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not really. I think one of the key principles as a structural engineer is you have to be able to validate something for yourself.
Yes.
And you have to first have a hypothesis. And the software can only make you or enable you to understand it better or confirm that hypothesis works. So I'm very worried when I see, and I know this happens, when I see people using software as a black box, and it's not the fault of the software. Because how can you just trust something blindly as an engineer? You can't really do that.
Yeah, I'm seeing it more and more with younger engineers as they're coming out of school. They really are leaning on the software to do the engineering. And I always try to tell them is, you're the engineer and the software is a tool to be efficient with. It repetitiveness to, and it can help with some complexities as loads are going in many different directions, might get a little bit more complex, but you can't really lean on it and say, well, this, the software says this is the answer. And that's something that always frustrates me when someone answers that. Well, how did this work? Well, the software says it's okay. Yeah. Green checkbox, you know?
Yeah.
And that always frightens me. And I'm worried that as the world continues from a technology standpoint and, you know, definitely with the onset of AI, that we're going to continue leading that way. So
I think we lean on speed also as an industry, is like the software can do this, solve this problem very quickly. And so lean towards younger engineers that, well, I don't need to hand calc this out. Like I got the answer in 30 seconds, done deal. That's this hard thing to sort of juggle as whatever. I mean, I don't know what's how to fix that, but
honestly, that was something I found very curious when we started implementing back when I was practicing the new tools.
Yeah.
And I was like, the calculation that took me 2 days, now I got it done in 15 minutes.
Yes.
And I was like, am I now the 11th? Or it felt really weird.
Yeah.
What do I tell the investor? What do I tell them? That,
right.
You know, that now it's done. But that's the efficiency. That's the speed that we need to be moving at.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what the technology can do for us.
Yeah. I'm curious. And these are just big questions that are open-ended. What keeps you guys up at night?
I'm accountable for a sales number.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, capitalizing on my quota, right? That keeps me up at night. I think that, you know, kind of aligning to that is even 5 years in the U.S., we're just back barely scratching the surface, right?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
this huge, unbelievable opportunity that we have for us. So how do I get myself to have structural engineers be aware that IdeaStatica exists? Because I think what we're up against in the U.S. market particularly is that they don't know about us.
Mm-hmm, right? Yeah.
And so that's what how do we capitalize on that market presence?
What's your guys' current sales approach? What does that kind of plan look like?
In the U.S., we actually are slightly different in how we do it in the rest of the world. We take a direct sales approach. So we have a staff of engineers that have made this switch to software selling, and we are selling in a direct model. And it's really trying to get some mind share through opportunities like this, attending a show where they'll have a presence of structural engineers and helping them understand there's a better, more reliable way to be able to do it. And then hopefully that sparks a conversation.
Yeah.
The thing that keeps me up at night is the question, are we building the right thing? We have a company full of talented people. We have so much potential. And it's a bit of a curse for the product manager.
Yeah.
All of us, honestly.
Yeah.
Because designing a building, eventually the building stands up full of people, is working. With software, it's never done. You have to find...
Continued development, yeah.
You're developing, and you have limited resources, of course. And are we asking ourselves the right questions? Are we in touch with the market enough to be able to identify the biggest pain we can solve?
And yeah.
I'm really curious from a direction of AI. This is on everyone's mind. I'm sure you guys have never been asked this question. From both the software side and the sales side, how are you guys implementing AI, or where are your minds at right now?
In terms of AI, the first thing we see, and I don't want to predict too much. I don't think anybody knows what will happen in 6 months. But what we see right now is it has at times replaced our UI layer, for example. It also makes us question what is unique about the software, about the tool we make. And what we see, it's the solver, it's the ability to describe any connection and geometry, but it's not necessarily the UI, the user interface of the application. Now, anybody can vibe code,
right,
whatever they need, and just connect to us through APIs.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, very interesting observation.
Yeah.
I think from the sales side, I think about it more about the tools that can help us internally, right? So whereas our product people are probably thinking about how it can help us from an external point of view for the customers. For me, I think about, you know, we run a lean, mean sales machine here. And how do I make them more efficient? How do I do things? And AI gives us an opportunity to do that, introducing agents or little bots that they can program and run to be able to follow up on opportunities or not lose sight of anything, right?
Yeah.
It can take a lot of effort. And I think those are types of tools that can help us internally be more efficient. So
yeah. I think AI integration with like CRM software makes so much sense. It can help you follow up and keep on track there. From the UI or the technology standpoint with AI, what does it mean to actually implement AI? Everyone says their software has AI.
We implemented.
We are AI. What does that even, I don't even know what that means.
Well, to give you one example that is very recent, we implemented a tool that can estimate your resistance of the connection without using the solver. Of course, it's not something you can then put into a report, but it's something that...
A starting point.
You've iterated so fast. When you compare the calculation time of a complex connection to something AI can produce in milliseconds, then that makes a lot of sense. So it's that same old thing. AI can give you a lot of options to choose from, give them to you fast, learn from your recent or older projects, help you succeed that way. But it's not going to be the thing that's responsible in the end.
Yeah, I like that combination a lot. I mean, still leaning on the solver that has been tested and proven, and then, but AI can produce close very quickly.
And you don't need to run the solver 10 times
to
get to the final result. You just run it once at the end to confirm that whatever you were at.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. One thing I was really curious about is how do you guys make the difficult, the hard, you know, decisions without always all the information, you know, that incomplete information that you have? How do you make those decisions off of that?
One thing that helps me sleep at night, knowing that I'm not going to make the perfect decision every time, is just to try to make the good enough decision.
Yeah.
Like 80-20.
If
it's better to build something that's almost perfect, rather than keep on trying to figure out what's the perfect thing to build and not build anything.
Yeah, I like that.
Pragmatic approach to it.
Right. Yeah, as engineers, we want to be perfect. Yeah. I think of it all the time as like the hardest thing about this job is just being human. You know, you're going to wake up tired one day and you're going to miss just one thing. And that's difficult because humanity is really leaning on structural engineers to do their jobs correctly. Five people go into buildings and feel safe. So,
you know, for me, I would say from a business perspective, it's about, you know, trying to make the best informed decision you can, right? And in the engineering community, both inside of Ideastatica and outside, that's something that's natural to them, right? They really like analytical type decisions and data-driven decisions. So we try to take a look at, you know, when I'm asked, how would we expand to a new market? What would that new market be? Right. Or when I'm asked for advice on what should go into the product in the future, right? I try to look at as best informed decision as I can. What are the customers asking for, right? And I have that inside track because I get to talk to them on a regular basis, right? Or what is the market opportunity in that size? The more data we can make to that decision, and you won't always have 100% of it, but the more that you can have really helps us decide.
That makes a lot of sense. From with building a sales team to then go out and sell to engineers, how are you preparing them? What does that like that look like, the emotional intelligence, the leadership side of things?
I would say in a lot of ways in the last 9 months, they're preparing me more than I'm preparing them. So our sales team are people that started as engineers. Mm-hmm. And I find that that is a natural door opener. Engineers trust other engineers, right?
Yes.
And they come at it from not a hard selling standpoint, but as a, I've been in your shoes before. I understand a lot of the pains and the challenges that you're having. I just want to explain to you what we can offer and how we potentially can help. And we really try to avoid that hard selling, right? Yeah. We find that you know, engineers naturally shut down if you come after it in that type of way.
Yeah.
So bringing engineers on as salespeople, I think, is a really fantastic step that we made.
Yeah. As you guys grow and you have staff all over the country doing sales, how do you maintain that culture? You know, usually growth creates a little bit of chaos, but how do you maintain that?
Yeah, it does. It can create chaos and it can create a siloed effect, right?
Yeah.
I would say inside of our region, the tools that are available today on like remote team sessions and things like that, you almost can't live without them anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because you can have people that are spread all over the country that feel like they're right next door, right? And feel like they're at the desk right next to you. So we as a culture inside of our team, we make a point to start our week together first thing Monday morning and we end our week together on Friday afternoons, right? And maybe it's just over a coffee. How is your week? How is it planning? How is it going? But actually, we have fantastic conversations about the business and how we can help each other. And that's been a really great thing. The second side of that coin is that we are one hub, one part of the overall Ideastatica, the global, you know, family. And we have to work really hard to make sure that we don't silo ourselves. Right? That we still have all of our people in Europe or APAC or wherever they might be. And we have to really make a concerted effort to keep in touch, share our knowledge and get them to share theirs as well.
I like that.
Going off on that culture comment, I think it's very important for us to keep a very open, transparent culture for teams to be able to self-manage themselves. We are here as two leaders out of the six leaders the company has, and that's it. Otherwise, the structure is flat. And if you are very open about your goals, about the numbers, your colleagues can make very informed decisions. And there are no bottlenecks, no single points of failure in that whole thing. I fully trust Stephanie to make the right decision, but I also fully trust the team without Stephanie to make the right decision.
Yeah. How would you describe the culture of the company?
It comes from that passion for structural engineering, definitely. It's all there. And as Stephanie said, she's a unicorn in that we found it's quite easy to turn a structural engineer into a salesperson, for example. It's very difficult to achieve that other way around. Stephanie is doing a great job, but finding people like that, even for other roles, like a UI designer, for example, it's so tough for these people to be able to understand what structural engineering is about.
Yeah.
And you too can also, as to the studying, what you had to understand, what you had to go through, the mistakes you had to make, the deadlines you were missing and saying late at night. You know, that's something that's very hard to translate to anybody outside of the field.
Yeah.
So we are structural engineers first is the answer. And whatever comes with it, the passion for problem solving, for simplifying the complex thing, that's the core.
That's nice. I can see a real benefit from coming from outside, because when you're in structural, you know, through college, you live in this world that's hasn't really changed that much. And you think a certain way, but from the outside perspective, like you see it very differently. Mm-hmm. And that is a nice way to, I don't know, think about how things can be done better. Think about things differently.
It's a different perspective,
yeah.
Right? And I think that the company kind of acknowledged that is why I think they decided they wanted to bring in, you know, other areas of expertise, right?
Yeah.
And so they made the investment to do that, whether it's in business myself or in other areas of the company, right? I think we acknowledge that that's how you continue to grow.
Yeah.
With being leaders within this industry, where do you guys see things going in the next 5, 10, you know, years, as far as you can think?
I think in regards to kind of the business perspective and you know, my colleagues, you know, Andrea and Johan talked a little bit about this. I think that the engineering community itself will continue to go under time and budget constraints, right? We will continue to get squeezed on margins, right? So the way that they do things needs to continue to evolve and change. A huge part of that is going to be looking at tools that are innovative, that can help them be more efficient, act quicker, right? To Wojciech's example, how do you design a connection that took you 6 hours before to do it in 15 minutes, right? That's huge. Yeah. The time savings and the ROI. And if they don't have tools like that, they will lose that competitive edge inside of their market. So I think it's not going to be, how can these tools maybe just be a nice to have, but these tools are going to very quickly going to be a necessity inside of that engineer's toolkit. So I see that as continuing to change.
As far as the product or the workflows, or to put it very simply, this, the way you work from beginning from the architectural drafts and studies to fabrication needs to and will be more data-driven and will take a lot more care about the data we have as to not lose them throughout the process, not calculate the global structural analysis, have the forces and translate them to an Excel spreadsheet or to PDF markup. Why lose that smart set of data? The same thing with all the models, all the information you have. Just try to hold on to it as long throughout the whole process. That minimizes risks and speeds everything up. I hope that the industry leans into this a lot more than, you know, the BIM has been around for years and years.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at that adoption, it's not universally accepted.
No. I feel like recently BIM has really picked up, been around for a long time, and it's a very slow build.
Exactly. To make the case on data, again, why is AI helping software developers so much? They have all the data up there in their forums, solved problems, everything documented. The AI can learn, take solved issues and learn from them. Structural engineering data is in drawings, in PDFs.
Yeah.
AI really likes.
I love your answer too, because we just had dinner last night with a structural engineer here in Atlanta. And he was saying that one of his biggest frustrations, usually with using different software packages, is that you take the outputs of one and you need to plug them into the other yourself. You have to take those numbers and hope you put them in the same spot in the other software. And that was his big frustration.
Yeah.
And he said so often that's where the failure, the error really occurs, is just trying to translate. So I like that a lot. If we had any sales engineers listening to this podcast, how would you say they should go about improving their sales experience, or from that training perspective? You know, in my mind, I think it's more obvious to me of how we train and improve from an engineering standpoint, but from sales, you know, something Max and I, neither of us are knowledgeable. Yeah. How do you train and improve on that?
You know, I think it's not even something that is specific to the engineering field, but generally from a sales thing. Listen, don't make any assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. It's a really common sales trait to, you've been trained on your PowerPoint and you've been trained on your talk track and your value proposition.
You know what to say.
And now I'm just going to, you know, spew it all out at you, right? And if we just take the time to say, I'm here to help, but I can't help you if I don't understand, right? So take a moment and listen, because they might have problems that we don't exactly understand. And we need to make sure that we take that first initial step, or the value proposition that we think that we have isn't going to resonate.
Yeah. Active listening is something that we all need to improve on, I feel like, as humans.
100%.
Just hear what people are saying. What do you guys both see as great employees? What does that look like? What is a good value someone brings to your company?
You know, for me, it will forever be attitude. You can teach someone almost anything.
Yeah.
You really can, right? But if somebody has that passion for what they do, passion for showing up in the morning, that attitude, you cannot teach that. That's an innate type of thing. So when someone has that, that makes for an exceptional employee in my eyes.
In my mind, it's someone who can doubt themselves and still be efficient. Someone who can get rid of ego, for example, and just because you think it's the best thing in the world, all things to do. And being humble in the face of real data from our customers is the most important thing in terms of attitude. I think it's we can't really build something valuable if we don't listen and are not open-minded.
Yeah.
What do you think is one of the bigger lessons you've learned through your careers that you wish you could, you know, I always think looking backwards, all the dots connect. Everything makes sense when you look backwards and not necessarily forwards. But what do you wish you knew when you started your careers, right, you know, right out of high school, college? What did you wish you knew, the advice you could give to younger generations?
Stick with it. Yeah. so many times through your career, you think to yourself, and I think this is just human nature, like, I'm failing.
Yeah.
It's not working, right? And I have to make a change. But, you know, I think it's in the face of that, it can feel desperate. It can feel, you know, you can start to panic in the face of, nope, I'm still going to go after it again tomorrow, right? And if I could look back at myself through all the years, I would tell myself, stick with it because you're going to find a way to be successful.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
To me, it was, don't worry whether you are on the right track or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody told me that designing steel-to-concrete connections in a nuclear power plant would be a path to being a CPO at a software company, you wouldn't think.
Yeah.
You would. So just don't worry. And if you put your best efforts into whatever you're doing, it's going to pay benefits in whatever you end up doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're telling us here that you're a nuclear engineer in the past. We're just going to throw that in here, 30 minutes, huh?
That's actually a very funny story. That was my first job right after uni.
Really?
Yeah. So I was tasked with designing thousands of steel-to-concrete connections in a nuclear power plant. And it sounds really fancy.
Yes, it does.
Man, I have so many questions. Yeah.
To wrap us up here, what questions have we not asked yet you think would be so fascinating for our listeners to hear?
I think that from a career path, right? I think a lot of your listeners are still in education, right? Or in university or whatnot. And I think one of the things that's really fascinating is, so I'm not an engineer, but my career path has ended up in an engineering type world. And then we have engineers that went there that have ended up in a software type thing. There's so many paths for them to be able to take the knowledge that they're gaining today or that they've just gained or whatnot and be able to implement it without, you know, maybe the traditional sense that they've been thinking of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, kind of keep an open mind and follow the path that you're passionate about. It will still give you an opportunity to utilize your education. But there's all sorts of ways to be successful with it.
Yeah.
Perhaps going off of your answer is keep on asking why.
Yeah.
Don't take anything for granted. Don't accept any dogmas somebody's trying to impose on you. Mm-hmm. This is how it's always done. Why we're doing it.
It's a very engineering way. It's always been done.
It's always been done. Yeah. Do question it. You end up learning a lot doing it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for being on the podcast. We both look forward to continuing the conversation out on the trade room floor, looking at your guys' booth and just learning more. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. It was great.
Thank you for having us.